The bunting hangs limp. The balloons sag with wrinkles. The used paper cups and plates drift to the floor on a chilly breeze. The Football World Cup. Greatest show on earth. Most watched sporting spectacle ever. Defining moment for the African Renaissance is over. South Africa is now living inside the after echo of the Big Bang. A giant football still hangs at O.R. Tambo International Airport. Month-old matches are replayed endlessly on ghostly TV screens, and advertising billboards still welcome visitors who have long since departed. But flags are disappearing from cars, and the vuvuzelas have fallen silent. The attentions of a fickle world have moved on. South Africa is already Gordon Brown. Was it all a dream? Newspapers and television have returned to more familiar territory. An unarmed man shot dead by police when he failed to stop his car. Foreign nationals on the run from xenophobic attacks. Bitter power struggles inside Julius Malema's African National Congress Youth League. Nelson Mandela's 92nd birthday. There has also been much ruminating on what the World Cup Jamboree meant for the country and whether the legacy will last. Nearly everyone has marvelled at a triumph that surpassed even the dreamers' expectations, disrupted a centuries-old narrative of Africa as passive and incompetent, and raised the bar for politicians to now deliver housing, jobs, and schools. Some have relished cocking a snook at the British media and what was seen as its unrelenting negativity about South Africa's ability to play host. Political cartoons have depicted tabloid journalists being forced to eat humble pie. Ninawa Kloko, the sports editor of Business Day newspaper, branded them tiresome vultures, a mob, and mean-spirited schmucks who'd all gotten it into their thick craniums that South Africa would make a mess of the World Cup. He grumbled last week, "The worst of these hyenas would assemble outside press conference rooms in packs and discuss ways to unsettle the panel after organising committee board meetings." But I wonder if it's quite such a simple case of told you so. Those who complained about the British media always tended to cite three of its stories in particular. The mortal threat posed to fans by machete race gangs. Fears that South Africa would be devastated by an earthquake. The ominous presence of killer snakes near England's training camp. The first two of these appeared in the Daily Star, not exactly the in-flight journal of Air Force One. The third was in The Sun. The stories rampaged across the web and went global within minutes. But the vast middle ground of British media coverage was less sensational, more moderate, and often more positive, and therefore eminently less tweetable, so disappeared under most South Africans' radar. It could also be said that, not for the first time, a sceptical media kept those in power on their toes. In defence of South Africa's own press coverage, a leader in Business Day argued, "In fact, there is a credible argument to be made that one of the key motivators behind South Africa's successful organisation of the World Cup was the knowledge that there were plenty of critics who were convinced we would fail." But many commentators gave credit where it was due, while pondering what next. Here are some other World Cup reflections from here and abroad that stood out for me. "I've been to watch loads of games at the stadiums, but by far the best memory I take away from the World Cup was the atmosphere at Melrose Arch in Joburg during the South Africa-France game. From what I saw there, and from the reports of friends and fellow journalists who have taken part in joyous events of this kind up and down the country, I'd like to ask a question. If South Africa is not a united country, then what country is?" John Carlin, Saturday Star. As host of the most watched sporting event on earth, South Africa set out to reinvent itself in the eyes of the world, casting off its reputation as a place defined by violent crime, poverty, and AIDS. To a remarkable degree, it succeeded. But as the World Cup ended Sunday, what most surprised South Africans was how much the month-long sporting extravaganza had changed the way they see themselves. "This World Cup brought out South Africa's better angels," said Sean Johnson, a writer who leads a charitable foundation that Nelson Mandela helped establish. "In this country, so riven racially, it's unbelievable how much this World Cup has brought us together." Celia Duggar, New York Times. And so the burning question in South Africa at the moment is this. Why, if the state can build stadiums on time and deliver a World Cup to FIFA, can it not treat its citizens with similar respect and efficiency? Unfortunately, it is far harder to restructure the economy to provide jobs or to solve the crime crisis than it is to build a stadium or an airport. The World Cup is a bit like a wartime economy. The skills acquired and the capital invested might indeed boost the economy, but they are not necessarily transferable to a peacetime environment. Mark Gavissa, The Guardian. The Soviet Union, 1917 to 1990, was a miserable failure that condemned its own people to poverty and humiliation. But it did send the first man into space and produce the world's best ballet. On certain occasions, it could concentrate all of its energy into a few projects of high status, sacrificing everything else. Is South Africa like that? As our education, public safety and public health fails for our own people, are we as a country happy to make great sacrifices for the success of an international sporting event to impress other people? Andrew Kenny, The Citizen. Pride and confidence are hard things to measure, but in recent years, South Africa seems to have been running low on both. The magic of the Mandela era has been wearing off. But over the past month, the change I've seen has been remarkable. White families, faces painted with the national flag, have ventured onto buses and into black townships for the very first time, giddy with the sense of discovering their own country. Immigrants from around the continent have rubbed shoulders in crowded bars. Sharp-dressed Congolese, laid-back Zimbabweans, rowdy Ghanaians with their drums and body paint, all united by a rare but tangible sense of Pan-African unity. Then there are the fans from further afield, shocked to find, as one columnist put it here, that they're more likely to be killed by kindness than by criminals in South Africa. Andrew Harding, BBC.